Hello and welcome to Should I Love This Comic? My name is Damian Jure Whiter, and with me I have the amazing...
Spider-Man? No, the amazing Irigail Drue Whiter.
Irigail Drue Whiter, we're here again together to bring you another episode of Should I Love This Comic? And this time we're back into Should I Love This Era?
Whoa.
Talking about the Marvel Comics cover dated November 1986 with the special 25th anniversary covers. And this time we're talking about the Mighty Thor number 373, which had an on sale date of the 12th of August 1986. So very soon after your 11th birthday, pretty soon after my 12th. Yes. And the episode is called The Gift of Death.
Ooh.
It's written by Walter Simonson, drawn by Sal Buscema, lettered by John Workman, coloured by Christy Scheel, and edited by Ralph Macchio.
Mm-hmm.
The cover, obviously the two parts as usual. Walter Simonson draws the picture of Thor, and then the borders drawn by John Romita Sr. It's all coloured by George Roussos, and the logo design is by Alex J. We've talked about this logo design before, because we have previously covered an issue of Thor from this run. It was issue 355, so that's about 18 issues earlier, and that was episode 4 of our podcast.
It was.
So back in the dark distance times, about 2 years ago, which is terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
And at that point, Thor had just lost his father in an epic battle with Surtur and was in mourning. Now we're nearly 20 issues on, Thor has grown a beard and is returning to Earth to get involved in the Mutant Massacre. And there's less really to say about the background of this one before.
Mm.
We're talking about a comic created by people we've talked about before. We've talked about the editorial situation.
Yeah.
You know, as we go further into this Should I Love This Era, there's less to say about what's going on behind the scenes because it's the same people.
Yeah.
You know, the same editors were editing a number of books.
Sure.
You know, there's less to say, which I think means we can just get straight on with the story.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the story is called The Gift of Death.
Ooh.
He don't love you anymore. Just walk your fine ass out the door. I do my hair talk, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Hair talk, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Feeling good as hell. Baby, how you feeling?
Thor is travelling to Earth through the cosmic storms between Asgard and Midgard. The Rainbow Bridge is destroyed, but Thor's hammer Mjolnir can guide him through. Suddenly, Thor experiences a weakness. It feels like an attack, but he can't see an enemy. He presumes it is nothing more than a feeling and continues to Earth.
Mm.
Thor is still thinking about how his father disappeared fighting Surtur, and tries to use Mjolnir to travel to Muspelheim, where he was last seen. But the way is closed. He wonders if he'll ever find out what happened to his father. He arrives at the apartment he had set up as Sigurd Jarlsson, but he hasn't really spent enough time there for it to feel like a home. He could go to the Avengers Mansion, but he's not in the mood for companionship. He sits on a ledge on the Chrysler Building, hoping the night air will clear his mind. Witnessing a mugging, he intervenes. Back in Asgard, we see Heimdall working to permanently contain the great sword of Surtur. It is destined to remain in place until the end of time, when Surtur will reclaim it. Loki had recently used its power to attempt to trick his way into leadership, so they want to prevent anyone else from using it. Across Asgard, two human children awake in the home of Volstagg the Voluminous. He tells them the sad news that their mother has been killed and that Thor brought them to Volstagg to be cared for. And in one small corner of Asgard, there is not enough sunshine in all the golden realm that can lighten the sorrow in the house of Volstagg. Back on Earth, Thor, disguised as Sigurd Jarlsson, visits his old boss, Jerry Sapristi, who is happy to see him but notices his melancholy. Thor explains that his father recently passed away and he has no family nearby. Jerry invites him to dinner at his. Back at the Sapristi household, Thor meets Jerry's wife, Tina, and their six children. Tina leaves Thor in the living room with Ernesto, the youngest child, goes back to the kitchen. Suddenly, she hears Ernesto screaming, and the whole family run to see what's going on. Thor is throwing Ernesto up in the air, and he's having the time of his life. At dinner, Thor loves the food, and so does Ernesto, who copies everything Thor does. After dinner, Thor washes up with the family, and then Jerry and Tina invite him to stay the night, and he accepts. The kids want a story, but he's too tired. He does promise to take them to the Central Park Zoo and tell them a story then. We cut back to Asgard, where Odin's raven Munin brings a feather to Baldur, setting him off on a quest. The next day, Thor and the kids are walking through Central Park, asking about his father. Thor explains that he went missing, so he doesn't quite know what happened. The kids ask for the story they were promised, and he tells them of when Thor wanted to cross a river, but the ferryman wouldn't take him. When he finally got home, he saw the same ferryman in the throne room. It was Odin in disguise. Thor took the lesson from that in the end, no one can carry you across the river. You have to rely on yourself. As he finishes the story, a group of frogs join Thor and the kids. Rosa wants them to shoo, but Thor says, I think my old friend Puddle Gulp has recognised me, even though I was not wearing a beard when last we met. Thor has been turned into a frog at the time. Puddle Gulp tells Thor about something that makes him get up to leave. He tells the kids that he is a sort of undercover policeman, and he has to go. The kids had already realised he was Thor, so he uses Mjolnir to send them home and changes into his costume. He enters the Morlock tunnels to investigate, as the frogs told him of screaming and death. We cut to Hela, goddess of death, who watches Thor. She was responsible for the weakness Thor experienced earlier. She has put a curse upon him. The tunnels are full of death and destruction, but Thor hears a scream. It is Angel from X Factor, pinned to the wall by his wings, which obviously we saw in a previous episode. As Thor runs in, the Marauders attack. Thor fends them off easily with his lightning and turns to help Angel, but just then he hears them coming back to attack again. And the story ends with Thor shouting, Come, bold assassins! You shall find the son of Odin waiting for you in the dark. To be continued.
Yes.
Because it's a story that doesn't really stand alone.
Yes. Yeah.
It's kind of a bit of lots of different stories coming together.
Mm.
It's almost like a middle chapter in many ways.
It is.
But I found it quite enjoyable again.
Yes. Yes.
Shall we start by talking just about the things we normally talk about?
Yeah.
And see if we can come up with some idea of how good we think this comic is and how much we love it. So we have our score out of 40, which is each of us giving up to five points each for four topics, and then at the end we have a bit where we take points off if things were Kind of unacceptable now, but were acceptable in the 80s, because that's a quote from a song, and I'm a bit weird.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did you just agree that your husband's a bit weird?
I did. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
Ah.
It was Pride yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes, it's Pride every day for us. I'm proud.
Sorry.
He's making vomit noises. It's not good, is it? It's not a good sign. I'd say something sweet and romantic.
Anyway.
Not that romantic. So the first topic we normally talk about is accessibility. How easy is this to read and understand as someone who doesn't know Thor?
Mm.
Now, obviously, neither of us are complete Thor virgins at this point.
No.
We have read a Thor story already for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Thor films. We've seen Thor in other people's films. Mm-hmm. We've seen Avengers films with Thor in.
Mm-hmm.
We know a bit about Thor. We know the concept of Thor as the god of the storm, thunder and lightning, and the son of Odin within Norse mythology.
Yes.
So, you know, we're not completely new to Thor, but this was the first Thor comic I ever read.
Okay.
Because this is, we're saying, I've been talking about this era as being an era where I was discovering comics, learning them. This was my first Thor. And I feel it gave me enough, but I didn't understand everything in the comic when I first read it. How do you feel?
I thought it was really charming.
Did you understand what's going on?
No, but the swipe, the kind of curveballs they threw in, like the story told to children, the frogs, and to a certain extent, the family situation.
I mean,
we're all quite good.
Yeah, it's not what I would have expected. Before I read it, if somebody said, go and read this comic book about Thor the superhero, this is not the comic I would have expected.
No.
And it's a comic that, in some ways, is very good because it shows you the different sides of Thor. You know, the fact that he's an Asgardian, but he also spends a lot of time on Earth. The fact that he's a hero, but he's also human in a way, even though he's not, he's a god. It shows you the breadth. And what I think it does quite well is it explains where he is.
Yeah.
You know, on the first page, there's already loads and loads of, like, writing. And it's explaining, and you've got him travelling between Asgard and Midgarth. Midgard. Oh, wait, it does do it here. But Midgard with the star, and then it's got Star Earth.
Oh, okay.
With the asterisk. Yeah, yeah. So they explain that Midgard is Earth.
Yeah.
So it shows that he's travelling between these two realms.
Yeah, yeah.
Which in many ways is what at least Walter Simonson's Thor is about. It's about that there's an element within his run where part of the point is that Thor is out of place on Asgard because he loves being on Earth. He doesn't want to be, even though he's the son of the king, he doesn't want to be ruler of Asgard. He doesn't want to grow up and become the king himself. And at the same time, he's a bit of an outsider on Earth because he's not a human. So he's kind of in this liminal space. And I think that's all explained. And anything you need to know the backstory to is explained. You know, they explain that he knew Jerry Sapristi before. That he was working on a building site, that that building site got destroyed by a dragon. You don't have to have read that story. If you have, you know, when I first read this comic, I hadn't read it. I have now, 35 years later, 36 years later. Oh, God. I'm going to go and cry at how old I am. But, you know, I know the beginning of that story now. But it very clearly tells you he has a secret identity. Jerry was his boss. They were friendly.
So do you think that you'd got the parallel the alternative universe thing? Like, if I'd gone to work and somebody told me that work had been destroyed by a dragon, I'd been a bit sort of like, so how quickly did you understand that this wasn't the Earth that we knew, that we know?
Well, I suppose that's always there. It's always there in superhero comics.
Yeah.
Things happen in superhero comics that don't happen in real life.
So, you know, so Jerry is...
the people in superhero comics a lot of the time. And some people have done special comics that are about the ordinary people.
They don't react in the way that
they just act as though all these things happen and that's the world. We live in the same world as Thor and the Fantastic Four and the Avengers.
Yeah.
And maybe people we don't know about as much about, like the X-Men and stuff.
Mm.
They have superhero battles and they sometimes happen in New York.
Yeah.
And luckily they tend to knock over the construction sites rather than where people are actually living.
Right.
But it's just an accepted part of life within that era, particularly then. And actually, I'm just going to check something out in this comic. All speak to yourself. No, it's not in this issue. It was in the previous ones.
Mm.
So the bullpen bulletins at this period when I was first reading,
yeah,
they were introducing a new universe. That was their 25th anniversary thing. There was more like our universe. And they were introducing that, and there's like introductions to all those titles within the little column that's in the back of every single book.
Right.
And they do talk about how it's a new thing that's more like our world. So I suppose I was reading that.
Right.
And seeing this comparison between the Marvel Universe and our universe being made.
Mm.
So maybe that was part of it. But I think it's just a thing. It's a thing from action movies, from cartoons.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there are big battles in comics, in films, in, you know, that would have affected the people in real life.
Yeah.
And it just seems logical that the people, oh yeah, that happens. You know, a dragon comes along and knocks over your building and then he's taken away by Thor and destroyed.
Yeah.
And so we've had to start again and we haven't finished that job we've been working on for a bit of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and that just makes sense within their world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But again, you know, they're telling you about things that happened previously in the story in quite an organic way. Now, it set your mind off thinking of, well, what's it like to live in that world?
Mm.
And it might be quite interesting if you were to look at a comic like Damage Control, where they do, it's actually a humour series, but the idea is they're the people who you get insurance with to protect your place after there's been superhero battles.
Oh, okay, that's fun.
So they are the people who like put things back together.
Oh, that's fun.
There's that one. There's also a series called Marvels that is a press photographer's experience of all the superheroes turning up.
Right, right.
And their reaction to it and taking photographs, and that's kind of painted in a very realistic, photorealist style.
So was there a time when there were no superheroes?
Well, they start in the 30s, which is when Marvel Comics starts.
But I mean,
so it's like Second World War, you first get the Human Torch, you get the Submariner, who we've done Namor the Submariner in Alpha Flight he appeared in.
But I mean, was there
Captain America, you know?
Were superheroes always in this world?
No, only the general public has only been aware of superheroes since
what?
Basically the Second World War.
Oh, okay.
Within the Marvel Universe.
Oh, that's
now, there's been some expansion and contraction. Obviously, Eternals, which we watched the film of.
Mm,
we haven't read any comics with Eternals in yet. But the Eternals film sets up this idea that there's this secondary kind of superheroic thing going on all the time. And related to that, I know in very recent comics, they've done a thing where there was like, there's an Avengers that are set in the prehistoric period, Bronze Age Avengers, or I don't think they called that, but something like that. And the idea that the Avengers are related to Asgard and they're related to Odin, and then it comes through to Thor, and that it's something that's been going on throughout all history. Is a recent thing they've introduced into comics. I know I haven't read many of the comics related to it. And like the Eternals was something where it's always going on underneath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's certain characters' history that has been expanded over the years. So like the character of Wolverine, who you know from X-Men comics, he's, well, you probably know him from X-Men movies. We covered an actual X-Men comic, yeah.
I
We haven't, have we? We've done X-Men stories, but not an X-Men comic.
Okay.
There is one to come up. Issue 211 will be part of this series.
Okay.
But, you know, it's revealed he has a healing factor, so he can heal from illness.
Mm.
And eventually they decide that he was born in the 19th century.
Oh, okay.
You know, and he's very long-lived, and he's been a superhero of types for a long time.
Mm.
And there's other characters within X-Men, like Mystique, who's in all the films. You know, the blue woman who can change into any form.
Mm-hmm.
She's also extremely long-lived, and there's Apocalypse, who's one of the villains, who they end up making incredibly long-lived. So, you know, there is... They take it back further.
Mm.
But at this period in time, it's the Second World War.
Mm.
And that's like the public face. And it starts really with, you know, the original... The characters who were in Marvel Comics number one, which is Namor the Submariner and the Human Torch, the original version, not the one in the Fantastic Four.
Mm.
And then Captain America comes along about a year later.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they start. But obviously, you know, Thor is an immortal.
Right.
So there are stories about Thor that are set earlier.
Right.
But less super heroic because it was a different milieu.
Mm-hmm.
Milieu. I can't say that word at all.
Milieu.
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 Milieu. Milieu. So, yeah, sorry, we were talking about accessibility.
Yeah. And
there are questions that come up, but actually I think everything's explained to you.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I gave it a 5 out of 5 because... It was either explained to you, or if it wasn't, it was a deliberate mystery.
Mm.
So really, the least understandable bit, for me, is the bit where the Raven brings in a feather and gives it to Balder, and Balder runs off.
Oh, yeah.
To go on a quest. I'm like, what's happening there? Now, I got the issue after this a month later, which is another part of the Mutant Massacre. There's two issues of Thor.
Oh, okay.
And in that issue, you find out what's going on with the...
The feather, yeah.
Feather. So I know that now, but actually, I think the mystery was meant to be a mystery. They didn't explain it because they want you to wonder.
Yeah, which is interesting because I think, as you say, I think I might give it a 5 as well. And I think that's because we've read things where there's been a lot happening.
Mm.
As much as there's been happening in this one, but it's been a bit of a, like, a bit of a mindfuck.
Yeah.
And I've had no idea what was really happening, but...
I mean, ultimately what happens in this story is Thor goes back to Earth after having been away for a long time.
Mm.
He goes to see an old friend. Well, he beats up a mugger first.
Yeah.
Goes and sees an old friend, gets invited to dinner, has a fun family time.
Mm.
Some frogs tell him about a massacre and he goes to investigate.
Right.
And has a brief fight.
Yeah.
You know, and you get told lots of things. You get told that Thor was turned into a frog.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's completely insane.
Yeah.
But it's actually a really fun story. It's considered one of the greatest Thor stories of all time. And the Walter Simonson run on Thor is considered the best run on Thor ever.
Okay.
I think nowadays, there's recently a run that finished by a writer called Jason Aaron that's considered at around about the same level.
Oh, okay.
But nobody else have got close to Walter Simonson for just doing an amazing run.
Mm.
That just really, really worked.
Mm.
And when I eventually read that frog story, or sometimes people call him Throg, T-H-R-O-G, because it's Thor as a frog.
Very good.
And
whoever came up with that one would be very proud of themselves.
Yeah, and they came up with they gave the powers to a different frog for a book called Pet Avengers.
Right.
Which is actually really good, and I must make you read it at some point because it's amazing. But, it's actually a really good story, and it's, what he's doing is it's two different things going on at once. Walter Simonson plays with the whole idea of mythology and kind of magical stuff. So he uses ideas from fairy stories. And from Norse mythology. And obviously the prince being turned into a frog is a very fairy story thing.
Yeah.
And he also is looking at other comics. And it's... he dedicates those issues to a writer and artist called Carl Barks, who drew like duck comics, so Donald the Duck and Uncle Scrooge and yeah, so he drew a lot of Disney duck comics, and they're considered some of the greatest comics ever made. Now, I haven't read much of his work, I'll be honest, because Disney comics, at least in the era I was reading comics, weren't really being reprinted in the UK, so it wasn't something I saw. I haven't seen much of it, but it's clearly just excellent stories told with those kinds of characters. So he's taken that and he turns Thor into a frog, and then he gets turned into a frog, and he's a normal frog, and he's fighting with the, you know, against the rats in Central Park. The frogs and the rats round the pond are fighting. Over territory. And then he manages to get to the hammer of Thor.
Okay.
And there's a thing where if Thor doesn't touch the hammer for a certain point of time, he turns into a human.
Okay.
And what happens is when the frog Thor touches the hammer, he turns into a superheroic frog. So he ends up as a 6-foot-tall frog with a hammer who can fight battles.
That's terrifying.
Which is just fantastic and wonderful.
Mm.
But, you know, everything you need to know is explained. Mm. Even if it's as simple as Thor was a frog at the time.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of Thor going, oh, I didn't have a beard then. It's like, no, you were a frog.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, this is my first introduction.
Yeah.
But it's all charming, it's all fun, and you know enough.
Mm.
You don't need to know every detail.
Mm.
And it doesn't, you know, some of the ones that explain things really well, like the Alpha Flight, I think, explained everything that had happened, but also almost explained too much.
Mm.
You knew every detail of every character's backstory.
Mm.
Rather than just what you needed to know for that one story.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt a bit weighty and over the top. And even though there are a lot of words in this, I think it's much more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it a 5 out of 5 for accessibility. Yeah, what you go?
Me too.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. 5 out of 5. 10 out of 10. Now, then we've got artwork. Sal Buscema.
Yeah.
Now, I love his work. We talked about how wonderful he was.
Mm.
When I, when we covered issue, what was it, 355? I mean, I loved it in this. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought the frogs were very good.
They are actually, yeah.
They're very good frogs. And I'm, and I come from a country that eats them, so. And the whole kind of family thing I thought was very good.
There's definitely a thing, we were talking about this earlier, and I prefer to read the comics on actual paper, and Irigail likes Marvel Unlimited. You like seeing the panel view, don't you? Where you can just see one panel, it's bigger, the writing's bigger, easier to read, clearer.
Mm.
And when I was looking over and seeing these panels in big, I was noticing things I hadn't noticed before. The subtlety, the acting between the characters. And I actually went off and I googled when Sal Buscema was born. Because I wanted to know how old he was when he wrote this.
Mm.
When he drew this, sorry, he drew it. He was 50 when he drew this.
Mm.
And I think this shows a family man drawing a family.
They all,
You know, Sal Buscema is one of, I think he's one of 5 siblings.
Gosh.
And he had a number of children himself, a number of grandchildren later. And you can see that he's someone who's been around people acting like people.
Mm.
And those kids feel real in a way, even though there's a real cartooniness to them as well.
Mm. Mm. Mm.
And I think that those scenes stand out, which is very interesting because within comics fandom, if you ask people what Sal Buscema good at, people would say big fights.
Oh, okay.
He's considered an action artist, a very classic, you know, his first book was The Avengers in the 60s as a penciler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's considered someone who does big fighty action. He had a long run on Hulk, he did Spider-Man, he did do this Thor run. But actually, it's the subtle acting in a way I think is better in this story than the fight scenes, you know, which is not what you think of as his strength.
No.
And even, you know, people around a table eating dinner and washing up and cooking. It's so... It's just delightful, isn't it? It's really well drawn.
It is.
I tell you what we should talk about within the art, though, is the colouring.
Okay.
Because obviously when I'm on the real comic, it's coloured by Christy Scheel. She's the credited colourist, and she coloured it. And on Marvel Unlimited, they're using the recoloured version that was done for a trade paperback a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
And we could see, we were actually comparing panels, and it's really quite different, the modern colouring. And it's still credited to Christy Scheel, but obviously it's not her who did it. But no, I gave that art 5 out of 5. Wondering,
so that person who did the colouring on the Marvel Unlimited...
Yeah.
Do they not get a credit then?
I think they got credited in the
comic
reprint.
Oh, okay.
So let me see if I can find out who that was. I'm going to do a bit of Googling.
Because that's a bit rude otherwise.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think when they reprint it, they do a... But they're printing it exactly as it is in that... That particular... format in Marvel Unlimited, so the credits say what the original credits said, even if they've recolored it. It doesn't, you know, reset. I'm just very quickly go on, say something exciting, darling.
Okay, something exciting, darling.
Okay, he's not playing along properly, is he? While I try to Google.
So, yeah, so it was Pride this weekend in London.
Did you enjoy the art, though?
Of Pride? No, yeah, so I did, yeah. I thought it was really quite good. Strange enough, I'm not that taken by the front, by the... first page.
So you don't like the kind of more superheroic kind of stuff, or the...
This kind of thing seems a bit perfunctory, that word, yes.
Okay, yeah, it's credited as being recoloured by Steve Olaf.
Oh, okay.
Who is a great colourist, and has done lots of great, great work.
Mm.
But yeah, he's the credited recolorist when it was reprinted. So, yeah. Yeah, when they reprinted it in a book collection, which was in... What year was it? It was many, many years after the original. So it would be... Does it say here when it was released? 2011. So it was recoloured in 2011. So that's like, what, 25 years after the original release.
They do pack an awful lot of stuff into...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of words on the pages. And again, we've talked a bit about how that was a bit of a trend at the time.
It's just a lot of story, this kind of whirlwind thing.
Yeah, where he tries to go to Muspelheim, is it? The place where Serta lives? Because he saw his father falling into Muspelheim. I'm saying Muspelheim. I may have that wrong. That's a memory thing.
Yeah. I guess there are lots of things that are unexplained. But
you know, things like there is a relatively photorealistic version of the Chrysler Building, which is a real landmark in New York City. You know, there's a lot of... Within the art, there's a lot of different things.
Mm.
You know, and he's doing superhero action. He's doing modern kind of architecture, and it looks like a real place.
Yeah, that was
He's doing lots of different kinds of people. They're interacting in logical ways. You know, and yes, there's cartoony shortcuts. But it is, for me, it works really well.
I did wonder what was going to happen with... the villain or the man.
Oh, the mugger at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really just... I think it's just, again, another bit of adding a little bit...
of realism to New York being a bit of a...
well, particularly at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the bit with the two boys in the full stack. Yeah, basically the art's amazing. I've given it 5 out of 5.
Yeah, what and then this bit, of course, was a bit kind of the two boys, what was there? There's, I think if we take anything away, I think there's that bit where actually we, I didn't mind not knowing, I didn't mind not knowing a lot of stuff. I didn't mind that there were bits that were not explained or seemed to be forgotten about until whenever. Sort because if you are,
I think, you know, we talked about this rapid, a bit through accessibility.
Mm.
But part of what makes it accessible, it's not weighing you down.
Mm.
You know what you need to know.
Mm.
You know, they give you what you need.
Mm.
And if the art's doing the job, this is, again, something I think, because Sal Buscema is good, and because Walter Simonson is an artist who's writing a book, if Sal Buscema showed it in the art, he didn't need to write it as much.
Mm.
So you don't get character studies of all the characters, all the children, the 6 children. You know, Ernesto's the youngest and he's a bit shy and he doesn't like his vegetables.
Yeah.
So he starts the story kind of hiding behind his mother's skirts.
Mm.
And then he's like Thor's best friend within a couple of pages.
Mm. Mm.
But the other characters, the other two boys, the 3 girls, you just know their age order, who's eldest, who's youngest.
Mm. Yeah, that's all you need.
You get a little bit of their interactions and the kind of questions they ask and stuff. But they don't feel the need to explain who each one is because there's enough there.
No.
And I think it's about trust between writer and artist in some ways. Which is another reason I give it a 5 out of 5. But what are you giving it for art?
5 out of 5, I think, also.
Ooh.
I like, you know, I like this thing. I like, you know, I like her big expressions. I like the mother.
Tina. There's this real thing, isn't there, where at times he goes very cartoony, and actually he does that more. His brother, who we've seen his art in 2 books, John Buscema, is a much more realistic kind of artist, where it's all going much more cartoony for bits, and there are real elements where people pull faces in a way that people don't really pull faces.
I don't know, I've done that face before.
Yeah, but you know, if somebody pulls that face, somebody's looking that shocked, you can see their teeth.
Yeah.
Well, she's got a white place where her teeth would be.
So that's
unrealistic as such, but it's expressive. And it tells you what she's thinking.
Yeah.
And you know, that's something within the artwork where the lettering, I think, sometimes is part of the artwork, and that's where John Workman's so good, and Walter Simonson's known for working with John Workman, particularly on sound effects, where the kid's screaming and you can't tell if it's a fun scream or a scared scream until you get into the panel.
Yeah.
Shall we go from that to characterization? Because I think those facial expressions tell you a bit about characterization.
Mm.
What would you say? Do you know who the characters are? Do you know what they're feeling?
Yeah, the main ones.
I think you do. I think there's enough. I think, actually, and again, I think it comes from being an artist as well as a writer.
Mm.
In the writing, Walter Simonson really boils down to what shows you who they are in various ways.
Mm.
You know, and it's there in the art and the writing. You know, Thor is somebody who's going through a bit of a crisis. That's written all over his face all the way through the story.
Mm.
And it's there in the stories he tells and the stories he hears and his interactions with people. But ultimately, he's in a bit of a turmoil, but that doesn't stop him helping other people in various ways.
Mm.
Because that's, Thor is like your pure superhero in some ways. At least the Marvel version of Thor at this point.
Mm, mm, mm.
You know, and you kind of know who all the kids are. You know who Tina and Jerry are. I mean, some of them are very caricaturish. Hela is a villainess who's cursed him, is very caricatured.
Mm.
I think you'd probably say the Marauders, the villains in that, are very much caricatures.
Mm-hmm.
They just try and hit him and then he scares them away and then they're going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But you do know who the characters are, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah, no,
I mean, I suppose the most confusing character in it, really, is the character who's not there, which is Odin.
Yeah.
Because he talks about him in lots of different ways. You get the story about the past, where why was he doing what he was doing? Was he trying to teach him something? Was he just being an arsehole? Did he disguise himself just because it was fun, or did he disguise himself because he wanted to teach a lesson? You know, he's a bit obscure, but I think he's deliberately obscure. I think they deliberately set it up that you don't know the motivations of that character.
Yeah.
I would say characterization. I again gave it a 5 out of 5. What are you on?
Oh, I'm going to follow you, I think. As you say, I think the Marauders have a...
I mean, in fairness, I think they're on like 3 panels.
Yeah, I think they're kind of like, you know, they kind of reminded me a bit like, you know, the sidekicks in He-Man or...
I mean, they exist only to be the characters who are torturing Angel.
Yeah.
And Thor comes across them.
Mm.
And has a very brief, like, interaction with them.
Fisticuffs. Mm.
But it's about setting up the following issue, I think, not about... And in the following issue, you find out a bit more about the characters of the Marauders.
Mm.
There's actually a couple of them are given characterization by how they interact with Thor.
Okay.
But in this issue, they don't really, because they don't need it. You don't need to know the backstory of them. Mm. You just know they're hurting people. Thor's heard that people are being hurt and he's gone to try and help.
Mm.
Would be my thing. So, anyway, what do you give for characterization?
Ooh. You gave it a 5, didn't you?
Yeah. What you go?
Let's give it another 5.
Another 5. We're being very strong today. We're going in hard.
I know.
So to speak. Mm. Cover.
Ooh.
Walter Simonson. John Romita Jr. Senior. Mm. Sorry. Senior? Not junior. John Romita Sr. And all coloured by George Russo with that amazing logo by Alex J. I love that logo.
Mm.
I think that's a great Thor logo. The best Thor logo, in my opinion.
So is the border the different than all the other borders we've been...
No, it's the same.
Oh, okay. So,
it's the same border all the time.
Okay, I thought so. So the picture... I do like it. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit...
It's a very grim picture of Thor, dark. I think.
Yeah.
It's very dark. It may be...
Brooding.
I don't know if it reflects the story enough. I suppose Thor is brooding a bit in the story.
Mm.
But in many ways, the story is actually slightly a comedy.
And also the light and shade, maybe, of Thor. Because he can be a family man.
One side's
man.
In the light, one side's in the dark.
I mean, because one side... Because he's a family man, or he can be. But he's got, like, an underside of, like... broodingness and wants to find out who killed his father and why, and so yeah, the only bits I don't like and I don't really understand are like his kind of breastplate things.
Well, that's part of his costume, you can see them on the border.
Yeah, but yeah,
you see, I like the fact that, and this is very Walter Simonson, that he's mixed like extreme realism in the way the face is drawn with then an abstract in how the costume's drawn. And I think that's part of what makes him a great comic artist, that he can have moments of real realism and then moments of absolute abstraction within the same image, because it's drawing your attention to what it needs to. And actually, the breastplate, the costume is not important. What's important to him is the face. You know, and we've seen before, Walter Simonson was responsible for 2 of the other covers. He did the Daredevil one, which was inked by Bill Sienkiewicz, and he did the X-Factor one, which he inked himself. And the X-Factor one was really, really clean, really, really graphic, really modern looking. The Daredevil was much darker and shadowier. And he's using different styles to say different things about different characters. And I think the colouring on this is beautiful, actually, as well. Which, you know, George Russo was colouring all the covers at that point for Marvel.
The hair is very good.
The hair, there's lots of colours in the hair. And the way the blue and white are used to create the helmet.
Mm. Mm.
You know, I think it's really effective.
Mm.
And I think it gives you an idea of the broodingness.
Mm.
As you say, that's within there. I think as well, the...
wrinkled forehead.
Yeah, he's kind of wrinkled, he's kind of concerned. I do wonder if the deliberate decision to put one eye entirely in shadow is meant to link to Odin, who's got an eye missing.
Okay.
Or if that is just about trying to do a moody shot of Thor.
Mm.
And what I think it does very effectively, and some of it's the colouring and the, like, the placement of blacks, but I think it really stands out from the border.
Right.
It's one of the covers that we've done where you notice the image inside more than the border. Mm. And some of them you've noticed the border more, or you've noticed both equally.
So the reflection, I think, is quite interesting.
Mm.
I don't know if that's...
the fact that that's metal, I think, and you know it's metal.
Yeah.
And the feathers look like feathers on the helmet. It's very...
oh, okay.
Yeah, I think with a real simplicity of line.
Okay.
He's given you different textures. The hair looks different to the... metal looks different to the feathers, looks different to the skin. And actually that's done with quite simple lines, isn't it?
I'd have assumed the feathers were metal.
I don't think so, although they do look a bit shiny.
Yeah, I would have thought they were.
I don't know, I would have said...
because what are they attached to?
Well, they're attached to the helmet, but...
but how are they attached?
Yeah, maybe they are meant to be metal. Okay, we can disagree on that one.
I don't know.
We're not sure.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's interesting. So that cover, guess what I gave it out of 5?
Oh, I think you might have given it a 5.
I did. Favourite logo for Thor?
Yeah, the
favourite
logo is
Thor
very
image.
Good.
I love that corner box image of Thor with his hammer by Walter Simonson.
No,
I just think it looks great. I think it really draws... your attention is drawn to his face by the whole image.
And his boobs.
Well, I don't think you do notice them, actually. I think the fact that...
yeah.
The breastplates are completely abstract. In a way, makes you ignore them more than anything.
Maybe, but then this bit, kind of.
Hmm.
His shoulders are... It's almost like he's poking his head above something. Hmm. I don't know. Sort of like, I mean... yeah, no, I think... yeah. Sort of, no, as you say, it's a good image. It's well coloured.
Hmm.
The little details with the little... point on top of his helmet, which obviously you'd have to have.
I think what it's done as well, one thing it's done, and it's one of the
I'm
things
just trying
that
to work out
makes...
what the perspective is, because if the perspective...
it is kind of you're looking up at him slightly.
If the perspective
think.
Was
I think
really
he's looming
as,
over you a bit.
If the perspective was as low as what those breastplates would say, then there should be more chin. But I'm just being a bit...
but then the beard kind of disguises that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think for me, I think one of the things that Walter Simonson does really effectively with his pictures of Thor is he takes a Jack Kirby design, which is really a sci-fi design, and he gives it a feeling of it being a Viking.
Yeah.
He adds... I don't know quite how he does it, and it's... you know, some people, when they've done Thor, have made everything Viking. Mm. They've gone historical, they've gone... and some people go, like, 100% Jack Kirby. They go for the kind of space age, futuristic, Asgard kind of thing, where it's Kirby tech rather than being Viking. And I think what Walter Simonson was very good at doing was, like, fusing them. That he takes a design that was drawn first by Jack Kirby and then makes it look Norse.
Mm.
And I think it's about that kind of... I mean, this looks like the face of someone who spent a lot of time on ships. And I think that's part of it. But what's your score anyway? We need to get a score.
Five.
Five again. So we're currently at 40 out of 40. And we've got to decide if we're going to take off anything for it being acceptable in the 80s and not acceptable anymore. Was there anything that stood out to you in this issue?
No. What do you think?
The only thing...
Maybe stereotypical frogs. No, maybe stereotypical Italian families. But...
I thought you decided they were probably Spanish or South American. I'm not sure. I always thought Italian, but then Irigel's pointed out the names are more Spanish. Maybe somebody could let me know. But for me, there is one thing with the family that feels a bit odd. And there's the whole thing about he's not married. You know when Tina doesn't want him to come there? And Jerry says, oh, but he has to, he's not married. And I think the parents are trying to set up Thor, who appears like a man in his 30s, with one of their daughters who's like 15.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the idea.
Mm.
And that feels a bit weird. But I don't know, maybe that's not the idea. Maybe that's not... Maybe he's saying, oh, but he's not married, as in there's no one to take care of him.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I don't know if that's worth taking a point off. And there is that kind of thing of just leaving a strange man who you've never met before with your young child.
Yeah.
Feels very 1980s, very overly trusting.
Yeah, but I was left alone.
Well, we were 8 years old. We were in the 80s. That was acceptable in the 80s. We were left alone as kids quite a lot.
And left me in front of telly in front of Robin and Sherwood for a whole evening.
Well, I had, I was a latchkey kid, as they say.
Exactly, me too.
Had my own key at about the age of 8. Let yourself in.
God.
Because mum was at work. But that's very acceptable in the 80s and maybe not acceptable now. So it's less of a political war. You know, quite often the acceptable in the 80s stuff is like racism or sexism or homophobia in some way.
Yeah.
And actually it's more kind of societal stuff.
Yeah.
And some of it's very relevant. When he's going through, like going to Brooklyn and talking about how the place is being, all the yuppies are moving in and they're trying to change it.
Yeah.
That feels incredibly modern, actually.
Yeah.
That was happening in 1986, but, you know... Gentrification is something we talk about in 2022. I almost said 2021. I forgot what year we're in.
Well, my mother doesn't even know what month we're in, apparently.
Yeah, we're losing... I think we lost a year with the pandemic, didn't we?
What, my birthday next week.
It is Irigel's birthday this next week, and he's going to be the grand old age of 47. Don't tell anyone.
But I look 21 on.
I couldn't decide whether or not I want to take one off for that.
I think we probably should.
One between us or one each?
One each, just to be.
So take two off and it's 38 out of 40. Yeah. Now, can you guess where that comic comes in our list? We've done 8 of these issues now. Do you think it's near the top or near the bottom with 38 out of 40?
Oh, near the top.
Yeah, it is the top. It's the new top.
Oh, wow,
it's 1 point ahead of Avengers. So the order is now, Thor is top with 38 points.
Mm.
Then it's Avengers with 37.
Mm.
Then it's Conan with 32. Daredevil, 31.5.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing Spider-Man with 29.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic Four's on 28. Web of Spider-Man, 23. And then, very sadly, X-Factor's at the bottom with 21.5. Mm. And that was because of all the points it lost for acceptable in the 80s, because there were some incredibly racist character names, unfortunately, because I love that comic.
So how many of these have we got left, do you think?
Quite a few.
Oh, okay, so...
But what we're going to continue to do, over the next... Sorry, my phone just told me I got a message.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to continue to do is continue alternating. We were talking about that in our last episode, which was about George Perez, which if you haven't listened to, I'd recommend you go and listen to.
Very good.
It's a very good comic, and also we were talking about George Perez, who was a great man, I believe. And I think that was very important. I'm glad we did it as a memorial to him.
Absolutely.
Because he was very special to comics fans.
Yeah, don't cry again.
I'm not going to cry again. Although I did cry in that episode, yeah. If you want to listen to it.
I know.
But I think I like the idea of us alternating, because I've been enjoying this, looking at all of these 25th anniversary issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of ranking them, comparing to each other.
Mm.
You know, what's good about them, what's bad at them. But when we started this podcast, the idea was, I'm convincing you that I should love these comics.
Mm.
It's called Should I Love This Comic? Mm. And, you know, because we're looking at an entire era, we've looked at some comics that I'd never read before.
Mm.
So I didn't love them. And then we're saying, should I love them?
Mm.
But there's so many others that I want to talk about. There's so many other great comics.
Mm.
So I want us to continue alternating. So we'll do one of these 25th anniversaries of Marvel, and then do another comic.
Okay.
And then do a 25th anniversary, and then another comic. And it might mean it takes 4 or 5 years for us to get through all of these.
We've listened to podcasts, where they?
Yeah, it can take a long time to get through something.
5 years to things.
But I would rather do that, and we have more breath.
Yeah.
And also, we're getting back into, should I love the comics I love?
Mm.
You know, there's so many great comics out there, I think.
Mm.
And that collection I have in the corner of the room, that Irigale thinks is too big.
Well, I'm only worried that one day we'll end up being killed by them.
But you're buried alive under a stack of long boxes. But
that's a very fitting way to go.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I do love comics, and I should love comics. Mm. And I think it's more fun if we have more variety.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect, I haven't decided my next one, but I suspect I'm going to try and avoid Marvel.
Mm.
Because if we do two Marvel and then we do a Marvel as a change, it's still Marvel. Mm. But our next one will be something else. I haven't decided yet.
Mm.
So that's quite exciting. We'll have a surprise.
We could do my namesake.
We could, but
you didn't.
I love you, but I don't love that comic.
Did not even ever read it?
Well, I've only read it in French, and I don't really understand French.
But there's an English version over there.
Is there? Oh. Okay, I should have a look. Anyway, on that bombshell, we come to the last question. Should I love this comic? Should I love this issue of Thor from 1986?
Yes,
I should. This is a great comic.
Mm.
And the entire Walter Simonson run of Thor, from issue 337 to, I think it's 383? I might be wrong about that last issue. It's a long run. It's been collected in many ways. It's available on Marvel Unlimited. I would recommend everybody who can to go out and read as many of those issues as possible. They are amazing. If you want to hear more about the background to it and see more of what we do, we have a blogspot at shouldilovethis.blogspot.com, where I will share pictures from this, and you know, you can pick up the podcast. We also are on Twitter. I'm at Whiter Trash. Irigale,
I'm at is it Irigale?
Irigale 32. I remember. You see, I know who he is.
At Irigale, Y-R-A-G-A-E-L, for anyone who gets.
Yeah, for people who are like, Irigale.
Irigale, how do you spell
How do you spell that name?
Where did that come from?
And yeah, we'll be back hopefully within a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We're trying to do these every, I think we're aiming at about every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I did try every 2 weeks and I can't achieve that.
No.
A monthly felt like I'd failed a bit, so I think every 3 weeks.
Life gets in the way,
doesn't it? It does. Life gets in the way. But we'll record another one of these, and all I can say is thank you very much for listening. Should I love this comic?
Yes, you should.
See you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.